Happy Cinco de Mayo. The Uncrowned Wrestling Show, Solomonster here. And I did not bid on Hulk Hogan's wrestling boots. I did review his new Netflix documentary, if you missed it, that was on last week's show. But this week, an old pair of wrestling boots belonging to the Hulkster, they went up for auction. Not the first time this year that people have bid on his boots. Back in February, the boots said to be worn by Hogan in the main event of the very first WrestleMania sold for over $1 million. That was the auction where Logan Paul tried to buy them, but he got outbid. He was up until like 2 a.m. after Elimination Chamber, just bidding on these boots, but he lost out. He should have bid on these. These ended up being a lot cheaper. Darren Revelle, he tweeted on Sunday that $146,803 was the winning bid at iconic auctions for Hogan's boots that were matched to the 1989 Survivor Series and the 1990 Royal Rumble. Survivor Series 89 actually had my favorite team ever. Hogan, Jake the Snake, and Demolition. Like, it doesn't get more 80s than that. And the Rumble in 90 is where Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior had their first showdown. And let me tell you, as a kid back then, that was a big deal. And Hogan won that Rumble. So it's the second highest price ever paid for wrestling boots, second only to the ones that sold earlier this year. I would have splurged, but my $100,000 already went to TKO for WrestleMania tickets. Unfortunately, there were 4 more WWE releases this week, 2 of which are the biggest names. Yeah, this was shocking when I heard the news. Backlash is this Saturday in Tampa. I've got a preview and predictions for you for that, with some last-minute news on what went down last night on Monday Night Raw. News on a big change to Roman Reigns' schedule that has people talking, even though it shouldn't. Now we know why there was a change to his schedule. And some AEW news that, and I use that word news very carefully, because people have been talking about this now for days, and how accurate this is up for debate. But since it's been spreading online, it's become a story. I felt the need to address it here. Before I get into all that, I want to take a moment here to send my well wishes to Rebel from AEW. We have not seen her on TV in a couple of years. She is still signed there. And she has said that Tony Khan has taken care of her as she's been dealing with some very significant health issues going all the way back to 2024. Just trying to figure out what's wrong with her. She's seen multiple doctors, been, in and out of doctor's offices and hospitals. First, she was diagnosed with a rare form of lymphoma. And that came after a long period of time, again, where she was trying to figure out what's wrong. And they hit her with that cancer diagnosis. And I guess in a way, it was kind of a relief just to get an actual diagnosis. So she had a mass on her lung removed. She was getting ready to undergo more surgery on her lungs when she got the news that she has been diagnosed with terminal ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, which is a progressive illness that basically ravages the brain and spinal cord, which would help explain why her speech has been impacted. Her ability to walk has declined. I think she's been getting around in a wheelchair. Eventually, it paralyzes you, and it requires round-the-clock, 24/7 care. It robs you of everything. It is just a terrible, terrible illness, and it was heartbreaking watching her video on social media where she said that she just prays for a peaceful passing. I don't know that I could hold it together like her if I ever got news like that. I'd like to think so, but until you're in those shoes, you just don't know. And she's only 47 years old. She said she doesn't know how much time she has left. All I can say is she's got a lot of people in her corner rooting for her and thinking about her right now. It was nice seeing the Rebel signs, pray for Rebel, in the crowd on Collision this week. I hope that keeps up, and I hope she sees them all. But let's talk about the big news of the week. Last week, I talked about the 24 or so releases between WWE and NXT talents. TKO did some house cleaning coming out of WrestleMania. Unfortunately, there have been 4 more names that we know of that have come out since then. And a couple of big ones, Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods, as well as JC Mateo and Tonga Loa. And the biggest shock of them all is the fact that New Day is now gone from WWE. No mention of Big E. Big E is still there. Big E obviously isn't wrestling anymore. Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods, though, they are gone. And truly one of the most successful teams in WWE history. Teams, groups, whatever you want to call them, their longevity is unmatched, in terms of a group, a faction that came together and stayed together Outside of the Big E stuff, I mean, New Day never separated. They never went their separate ways. And to be together for well over a decade, somewhere in the range of 12 years, is just, like I said, unmatched. You think of some of the greatest factions in wrestling history, whether you want to go with the Four Horsemen or the NWO or DX or Evolution or the Bloodline or whatever, and they've all broken up. They've all parted ways at some point, and not the New Day. Even the Usos broke up for a while, and they're actual brothers. Some great wars with the Usos over the years. Those are probably New Day's best matches when I think back to it. I think back to Kofi Mania back in 2019. It was a happy accident after Mustafa Ali got hurt. You know, he was in a match with Randy Orton. I think it was a qualifier going into the Elimination Chamber that year. And I don't know that Ali was going to get what ended up being the Kofi push that year, and he would have become WWE champion. I doubt it. But there was a lot of talk back then. You know, he was going to go to the Elimination Chamber, possibly even challenge for the title of WrestleMania, and he was going to get a bit of a push. And then Orton, you know, stomping him, stomped him a little too hard right in the eye, and I think he shattered his orbital socket or whatever it was. So it was a happy accident, you know, that Kofi Kingston got tapped to take his spot. And he had been there for so many years, but there was just something about Kofi during this period, and the fans rallied around him in a way that was just unmistakable. You had to do something with it. You couldn't just ignore it. You couldn't just sweep it under the rug. So they told the story of Kofi Mania and working his way to a title match at WrestleMania and then ultimately winning, you know, the WWE Championship. And he's part of a very elite club now, no matter what happens for the rest of his career. You know, his name is now kind of etched in the history books that he won the WWE title of WrestleMania. That's the last WrestleMania that I personally went to. And I could tell you, even though it was kind of thrown there in the middle of the card, it wasn't the main event or anything, it was a very emotional moment. There were people in the stands crying. You know, it was just a great story. It was a moment in time. And Kofi is someone who was a veteran of that company. He had been there for 20 years. Xavier Woods, only for a little bit less than that. Big E is a big part of what made New Day work. And ever since he got forced into an early retirement, it just hasn't been the same, right? New Day really was never the same again after that. And then I think back to the heel turn in December of 2024. They were celebrating 10 years of the New Day. And they had actually been building tension between Kofi and Woods for quite some time. And so Big E comes in. They bring him in for this big segment, trying to keep the peace, you know, between these two. And they just shot this great angle where they turned to Big E and they blamed him, you know, for all of their issues and all of their losing. And you abandoned us. You deserted us. This is all your fault. And it was a great angle at the time. It got great heat. And I was excited to see a more serious side of the New Day. And how are they going to follow up on this? And then they didn't. They fumbled the ball, as they did a few months later with the John Cena heel turn. Very similar situation where they came out of the gate with a hot angle, and then they had no real good plan to follow up on it. Like, it sounded great when it was pitched. It was great in execution, and the follow-through just wasn't there. It's like someone on the Mets hitting a walk-off grand slam one night, and they're the toast of the town, and then they proceed to follow that up by going hitless in their next 20 at-bats. Which these days would be a very Mets thing to do. But Brian Alvarez is reporting that in the case of the New Day, it was their decision ultimately to leave only after TKO came to them about restructuring their existing deals. Evidently, they didn't like those deals that they were being offered, and they did not agree to renegotiate or restructure, and they requested their release, and it was granted. And per Fightful, the belief is that they had just signed brand new contracts last year, which were not due to expire until 2030. So their deals weren't up. They were still in year one of a five-year deal for each of them. And TKO wanted them to take a pay cut. That's really what happened here. They said, no, we're gonna leave. Please let us leave. And WWE obliged. So they get a 90-day vacation now before they make their next move. Kofi and Woods, whatever they were making, we don't know the exact dollar amount. Clearly, they were making very good money. All right, they were making, I'm sure, in the seven-figure range. And the issue here is that they were being paid a lot of money, and they weren't really being utilized on TV. They were doing very little on the show, which is not their fault. I don't blame them for that. Nobody should blame them for that. They're not booking their own angles. right? That's on Triple H and the creative team to come up with stuff for these guys to do. And if you are going to throw a bunch of money at these people, whoever they are, right? In this case, the New Day, but really whoever, you would like to think that they have some sort of plan in mind. Like, we're paying you a lot of money, so we're going to make you a priority on the television shows. And that just didn't happen here. That's a failure of WWE creative. It's a failure of TKO. And I said this the other day, you know, they signed these men to top dollar contracts and they treated them like bottom dollar bitches who were used most of the time during commercial breaks on Netflix. And so if that's all they were ever going to do with them when they resigned, they should not have resigned them. Or at least they should have had this conversation with them a year ago as far as, okay, here's what we think you're worth. And then put the ball in their court. And if they want to sign, they'll sign. And if not, then they'll walk. Because, you know, with these companies, you're talking about big companies in corporate America, right? It's all about ROI. Are they getting a return on their investment? It's hard to get a return when you're barely even using them. And they're a tag team in a company where they no longer put a premium on tag team wrestling, which is another part of the issue here. But again, why were they offered so much money to re-sign if they had no plans on what to do with them? When I ran down the list of releases last week, one of the names on that list was Santos Escobar. He's also gone. And he's another one where it confounds me when I think back to last year at all the reports about him letting his contract expire and they're chasing him down. They're like, no, we want to keep this guy. We're going to throw a bunch of money at him. And supposedly he got a big fat pay raise. He wanted some assurances creatively that, okay, are you actually going to do anything with me? Like, what do you have in mind for me? And whatever the offer was that they made him, he agreed to resign. And then we didn't see him for months until he magically reappeared in AAA earlier this year. And unfortunately, now he's hurt. He's had a couple of surgeries. He's not going to be back for a very long time. And so they did the same thing to him where it's like, well, we're not getting a return on our investment here, so we're going to get rid of you. He wanted to leave in the first place. You lured him back and gave him the impression that you actually wanted him and you actually saw value in him. The reality is they never saw value in him. They didn't want him leaving and going to AEW. That's the only answer here. These talents, like, before signing them, not after you sign them, why is there no thought being put into how to actually use these people? They're just trying to keep them under contract to prevent them from going to the competition. And then they turn around and they tell them, you know what, we don't want to pay you that much money anymore. Like, all the MMA fans that warned us about what would happen when Endeavor acquired WWE, they're looking awfully smart today. They pulled this shit with the UFC after they bought the company. Chuck Liddell and Matt Hughes, right? Two UFC Hall of Famers who Dana put on the payroll, largely as a thank you for their service. They were among the first names gone when Endeavor came in and they cleaned house. All the discourse on fighter pay and how low of a percentage it is, the lack of marquee fights and fighters in recent years, probably because they don't want to pay them what they made before. It's one of the reasons probably why Ronda Rousey is fighting Gina Carano for MVP promotions in a couple of weeks and not for Dana White in the UFC, right? They're content to put on fights with people that a lot of folks don't even know. Mike Johnson of PW Insider is reporting that he was told of a pretty majorly pushed talent who was asked to take a 50% pay cut recently and allegedly did so. And Dave Meltzer says that's true, but it wasn't a tippy-top person who took the cut. You could still be majorly pushed on the shows and very visible, but not be, you know, a top talent. Sean Ross Sapp of Fightful says a number of talents have been asked to take a pay cut. Wouldn't surprise me at all if that includes some of the names that ended up on that cut list last week, the post-WrestleMania cut list. At a time when the company is making more money than ever before, revenue continues to increase, $50 million at least for every Saudi show. Ticket prices have never been higher, so of course they're setting all kinds of gate records. And remember, the talent is responsible for their own road expenses outside of airfare and their own health insurance. They're asking people to take 50% pay cuts in some cases. And we were warned that this was going to happen, and now it is. And of course, no one is forcing these people to accept those pay cuts or sign those contracts. That's true. I have a feeling less of them are going to in the future if things keep up this way. But they're not obligated to sign with WWE or stay with WWE. But it's just a bad look when you're touting all of these records and you're slapping your talent in the face. The wrestlers are the engine that makes the entire thing run. Maybe TKO's goal is to slowly get rid of them all and replace them with Pat McAfee and Jelly Roll and Stephen A. Smith. Maybe that's the long game they're playing. They're going to replace them all with celebrities. Wrestlers being asked to restructure or renegotiate their deals. Yes, this is not the first time that we've heard of this. The classic example, the famous example that I think of is 1997, Bret Hart, who had just signed a 20-year contract with Vince McMahon to stay at WWE in 96. He had a choice. He could have gone to WCW. He was loyal to Vince. He didn't want to leave, so he stayed. And they agreed to a 20-year contract. And not even a year into that contract, Vince comes to him and says, I can't afford to pay you anymore. Would you defer a lot of your money to the back end of the deal? A 20-year deal. The company is near bankruptcy at this point. He's coming to him and saying, you'll get paid, but why don't we defer all the money to the end of the contract? The whole reason you're coming to him in the first place is because you're in financial troubles. So, of course, Bret said, no, absolutely not, as was his right, and that was the smart thing to do. You agreed to this deal, you're going to pay me my money. And Vince was like, well, I can't pay you. I'll give you permission to go negotiate with Turner. You can go to WCW and get yourself a deal. And that's what he did. Even though Vince then came to him and said, well, now, you know, a couple months later, I could afford to pay you. And by then it was too late. So there are examples of this. That's like the famous one. It's not the first time this has happened, but it's a lot easier to understand this sort of thing when you realize, and you look at it through this lens, you are a cog in the wheel, right? You're a number on a spreadsheet. And when you have outlived your usefulness, you're gone. Regardless of how many years you have left on your contract, it doesn't matter. That five-year deal, you can wipe your ass with that five-year deal. That five-year deal is not really a five-year deal. It's a way to keep you under lock and key as long as they need you. And when they don't, whether it's a year or 2 years or 3 years, you end up on a list like the one we saw last week and you get a nice swift kick in the ass. You know, there's a reason that WrestleMania felt soulless this year. This is not an isolated thing. This is how it is now. Overall, we're not just talking about one show, one PLE. This is how it is now. Kofi Kingston broke his silence yesterday, posted the following on social media. It's taken me 2 full days to respond to all my texts. I hadn't been on social media until today, and I'm overwhelmed by all of the messages here. So much love. So I can't help but to be filled completely with gratitude. My story has been nothing short of remarkable, and I'm truly blessed to have had such an illustrious, accolade-laden, and most importantly, fun-filled career. I made my childhood dream become the most wonderful reality. Throughout this journey, I'm so thankful to have been surrounded by great friends and to have built so many unbreakable connections with people that I am very proud to call my family. Most people go through life without ever experiencing a love like I have for Woods and E. That bond alone would have made this whole experience worth it. There are far too many people to mention by name here, but to everybody who has ever supported me, guided me, helped me, taught me, cheered for me, praised me, stood up for me, and even rooted against me, thank you. I appreciate you more than words can say. My main mission has always been a simple one, to provide a comfortable life filled with heartwarming memories for my family, and largely in part to all of you, I can proudly say that I have achieved that goal and more. This wasn't supposed to be a novel, so let me wind it down with some advice. Do your best to live life without regrets. Control what you can control. Always give it your all. And fight hard for what you believe in. Do not ever compromise or accept less than your due when it comes to your worth. Find the courage to believe in yourself and fearlessly pursue your goals and dreams, because anything is possible. The kid that was too small, short, skinny, scrawny, was never supposed to make it in this land of giants. Yet here we are. And so, as the sun sets on one chapter, so too must it rise in another. Tomorrow is indeed a new day. That's a great piece of advice from Kofi, by the way. Always know your worth. That applies, doesn't matter what industry you're in, doesn't matter what your job is, always know your worth. And if you feel like you are being undervalued or underappreciated or underpaid or whatever it may be, and I know in some cases, you know, in life, you got families, you got kids, and you need the job. But just as a general rule, always try to stand up for yourself and get what you feel you're worth. Now, Xavier Woods posted the following yesterday to his social media. He said, for the past 16 years, WWE has been my home. It's where I grew up, found myself, failed, learned, and got to live out things that the younger version of me could only dream about. When I first walked into FCW, I just wanted a chance to prove that I belonged and to bring something different to pro wrestling. That chance became a life full of moments that I will carry with me forever. WrestleMania, championships, King of the Ring, arenas around the world, and the gift of connecting with all of you by being myself. The New Day gave me a bond with Kofi and Big E that I will cherish for life. You believed in us even when our ideas were wild, and because of that, we got to show people that being unapologetically yourself is a strength. Up, Up, Down, Down became another piece of that same mission, a place for joy, friendship, and humanity. I'm so thankful to everyone, past and present, who helped build it brick by brick. To the locker room, producers, trainers, crew, camera teams, ring crew, everyone behind the scenes in the props department, thank you. WWE has the most special and hardest working props department that you will ever find. Love you guys, and none of this happens without you. And to everyone who has been part of this ride, thank you for believing in me. Thank you for letting me be Xavier Woods. Thank you for giving me the confidence to walk away as Austin Creed. My take on this is very simple. As shitty as the whole situation itself is, and again, signing them to new contracts a year ago, you know, a year into presumably five-year contracts, and then coming to them and saying, well, you know, we don't want to pay you as much. I don't care where you fall on the spectrum. That is a shitty thing to do to somebody. Be that as it may, this is the best thing that could have happened to these two men. Because these two now, they're you see it in their work over the years, how creative they are, how driven they are, how popular they've been. And obviously there's plenty of co-workers and wrestlers that they've worked with, wrestlers they have not had the chance to work with who have sang their praises and would love to get into the ring with the New Day. These two guys now have an opportunity to leave the WWE bubble where they made their name, but to leave the bubble and go do some fun shit somewhere else, because there will be opportunities, but they don't have to worry about there not being any opportunities. They're going to have plenty of opportunities now to write this next, and maybe final, but to write this next chapter of their career. And it's very exciting, you know, to think about the possibility, the potential, you know, matches. Some people would even call them dream matches. We know the Young Bucks have wanted to work with the New Day for a very long time, and I'm sure the feeling is mutual, and the New Day would love to work with the Young Bucks. Let's assume that they're going to sign a contract somewhere and they're not just going to aimlessly, you know, wander the earth, or they're going to just hang up their boots, you know, once and for all. That's not going to happen. This is not how they are going to want their careers to end. Of course, they're not done yet. So where do they go? Well, where they go, AEW would make a whole lot of sense when you consider the fact that their tag team division right now, certainly more than WWE, is thriving. And I'm already seeing reports the WWE may be interested in offering Xavier Woods some sort of deal to retain him to do stuff with their video game channel. Yeah, that's what the Up, Up, Down, Down reference was. Look, ultimately, he's going to make the decision that's best for him. And so that's for him to make. All I can say is that if I were in his boots and they came to me and said, you know what, we don't want you to wrestle for us anymore because we thought you were worth this. You think you're worth that. So we're going to part ways. But you know what? We would love to keep you around. So you can work on YouTube or you can do some video game stuff for us. I would tell them to go kick rocks. And that's being nice. I probably wouldn't say it in those words. Because Xavier Woods could be doing a hell of a lot more than that. But you know damn well that if they keep him around in some other role, a big part of it is to keep him away from leaving and going somewhere else. And there's a lot that they can do somewhere else. Too much to do, frankly, for him to say, oh yeah, sure. Sure, you smack me in the face here, but you know what? I forgive you. So I think I'll stick around. Now, the New Day going to AEW, look at the tag team division there. And I made this comment the other day that, you know, Nick Khan and TKO, they just did more in these last couple of weeks between the New Day and the Motor City Machine Guns. They did more for that AEW tag team division than they ever did for their own tag division. So you look at the landscape right now in terms of what we could be looking at 90 days from now with the AEW tag team division, and it's very exciting. You know, New Day, Young Bucks, FTR, the Motor City Machine Guns, if we assume that they end up going there, the Hurt Syndicate, Jurassic Express, on and on and on. I mean, there's so many teams, I don't even have them all listed in front of me. And that's to say nothing about all the other things that Kofi and Woods would be able to do if they want to, even outside of AEW, right? Which is a luxury that they would have that they would not have in WWE normally, because WWE likes to control everything. And you're not allowed to just go out and kind of book your own shots and do this convention and do this and that. But they're going to have the freedom now to do whatever they want. They control their destiny in a way that they haven't, in the case of Kofi, for 20 years. This is a chance now for him to go out and have fun. You know, he made his money. His family is secure. His future is secure. And now's a chance for them to go out there. And how do you want people to remember you? How do you want these last years of your career to be remembered? Who do you want to work with? What do you want to do? That's what's exciting about this. And if you're a fan of them, you should be excited for them too, because I think we're in for a hell of a fun ride in these next several months. So this, on the surface, seems like a negative, but honestly, when you look at the way they were being used or not used in WWE, they were wasting away, and nothing was going to change next year or the year after that or the year after that. To WWE, New Day was this great act on the shows. They made a lot of money off their merchandise. They were great ambassadors for the company. And then they just moved on, which is understandable to a degree because they have a lot of new talent that have been called up recently, even like Obafemi and Trick Williams and Ethan Page and Sol Ruka and Javon Evans. Like, there's almost like a youth movement in WWE with some of these guys. And it's great to see and it's needed. But if you're not going to have room for these people, and if you are not going to use them in the way that they can be utilized, then what are they doing there? Why were they brought back in the first place? That's the ultimate question. It's water under the bridge now. They're gone. They're going to kill it wherever they go. I'm looking forward to seeing where they land. Now, the other two names that were released, part of the MFT's faction on SmackDown, JC Mateo, or better known as Jeff Cobb, and Tonga Loa. They are gone from WWE. Jeff Cobb is a really good pro wrestler. Jeff Cobb spent many, many years, at least something like 7 or 8 years, in New Japan Pro Wrestling. I enjoyed his work under a mask in Lucha Underground many years ago. He was great. When I heard the news that he was potentially leaving New Japan to go to WWE, I was surprised because he had been in AEW before. I thought if he ever was going to make the jump, it would be to AEW and not WWE. And also that coupled with his age, because he is in his early 40s, I wasn't sure we would ever see Jeff Cobb in WWE. But then the rumor mill started, and there he was last year at Backlash. He made his debut. So he fell just shy of one full year working for the company. But I was excited to see what he would do in the ring with guys like Sheamus and Bronson Reed and Drew McIntyre. And instead, he had a grand total of 4 singles matches the entire year that he was in WWE, including his first night in against LA Knight, 1 with R-Truth, and 2 with Jimmy Uso. The rest of them were tag team matches with the MFTs, most of which came against the Wyatt Six, which has to be in the running for worst feud of the year. This was their great idea on how to utilize Jeff Cobb. And I compare him and the Motor City Machine Guns, who were also on that cut list last week. I think there's a similarity there in this. The Motor City Machine Guns were a tag team for about 18 years before they ever set foot together in WWE, right? That was another one that really surprised me when I heard that they were going there. But it kind of made sense because if you think about it, and I can't get inside their heads, but I'm trying to here, okay? I'm making an assumption. They could have easily gone to AEW. I think it would have been a better fit for them. I was more interested, though, to see what they could do in WWE, and I naively thought that maybe they could help inject some life into the tag team division, which they did for a brief period of time. There was a period of time last year where the SmackDown tag team division was on fire. And I don't mean a dumpster fire like it is now. Like, it was on fire. It was like one of the highlights of the week every Friday night. You had all these teams, and they were all gunning for the tag team championships, having killer matches. It was great. Like, the fall off of SmackDown, the fall off of their tag team division needs to be studied. But when I heard that they were coming in, I said, you know what? This is a now or never situation. Like, Alex Shelley and Chris Sabin being able to come into WWE, the biggest promotion in the world, and do their thing as the Machine Guns for the first time in 20 years. Either it's sink or swim, but we have to take the chance. We don't want to look back years from now and go, man, we had the chance to make the jump and we didn't do it. And what might have been? I always wonder about that with Abyss. You know, we had that great run in TNA. He was one of the TNA mainstays in the mid to late 2000s. And there's a famous story where he was going to come in to WWE. WWE was going to bring him in to actually do a program around WrestleMania time with The Undertaker. You talk about a big spot to make your debut in. And he got cold feet at the last minute. And I always think back to that. I'm like, he's the kind of guy who I think actually would have thrived in WWE. And I think he could have ended up having a good run for himself. But, you know, he wanted to stay loyal to TNA and whatever his other reasons were. But you don't want to live with regrets. And I'm sure that factored into the Machine Gun's decision. Jeff Cobb, I could see it being a similar type thing where it's like, yeah, I want to just move back from Japan to the United States because he had been living over there, you know, overseas for many years. And, you know, he wants to make good money and I get all that. But I'm sure part of it had to be now or never. I have this opportunity. If I say no, that door may never open again. So let's just give it a shot and see how it goes. And in both cases, it didn't work out. I don't know if you were to ask them if they would say, if you had it to do all over again, would you have made a different decision? Maybe they would have, maybe they wouldn't have. At least they tried. And they had their year or whatever. In the Machine Guns, it might have been a little more than that. Maybe a year and a half, I don't know. But I think that that probably is what factored into things. And Jeff Cobb is another one who, you know, he will not hurt for opportunities. I don't know whether that includes going back to Japan or going to AEW or TNA or wherever it may be. But he's a great pro wrestler, and wherever he lands, they will be better off for having him on their roster. Tongaloa, I got to be honest with you, I was surprised when they brought him back. I can't tell you that I'm terribly surprised that he's no longer there. You know, again, I don't take any glee in seeing someone lose their job. I hope he lands on his feet. But this is one of those cuts that just, it sounds about right to me. Like in terms of like how long this run was going to end up being for him, I think he was there for 2 years. That sounds about right. Hopefully this is the last that we hear of these cuts, but there's a lot of reports and rumors out there saying that we may have more and that they're offering pay cuts and restructured deals to a lot of talents. Very possible we may end up with another New Day situation where somebody says, uh-uh, that's not happening. WWE Backlash is this Saturday in Tampa, Florida. Well, you know, we were spared a tag team match with Cody Rhodes and Jelly Roll against Randy Orton and Pat McAfee. That had been the rumored main event for this show as of a few weeks ago. But one thing that it will have in common with WrestleMania, as John Cena hosted WrestleMania this year, he will be making a special appearance at Backlash. And, you know, for a guy who just retired, we're seeing an awful lot of him lately. I feel like we're seeing more of him now than we did before. But he's making an appearance. They didn't say anything about him hosting the show. But he plans on delivering some, quote, history-making news. And so they confirmed that he's going to be making an appearance. He sent out a tweet the other morning saying that he's got some breaking news that will change the WWE experience for both wrestlers and fans. And there's a lot of speculation that this will tie into this new Club WWE membership program. It's like a fan club that is in the process of being rolled out. But he said, it's official. I'm headed to Backlash. After months of planning and effort, I am so excited to break some history-making news. I can't promise it'll be perfect, but I can promise it will change the WWE experience for superstars and fans. See you live on Saturday in Tampa or at home on the ESPN app. And in a previous tweet, he had mentioned trying to do something epic in Tampa on Saturday. He promised Club WWE something special. So this is basically one of the key roles that he is going to have now going forward in his post-in-ring career working for WWE. Because evidently he signed a contract with WWE. He's got a new deal, and I guess it stipulates a certain number of appearances each year. And so this is one of those appearances. This Club WWE stuff, I don't know. I can only imagine what the membership fee is going to be or if there's multiple tiers. Evidently there's an annual membership fee for like gold tier members, and they'll get perks. They'll get like ticket presale access and exclusive merch and behind the scenes footage. I can't wait to find out what the membership price for this is going to be. I can only imagine. I don't even want to speculate beyond this, what this could be, because it's WWE. So chances are they throw around words like epic and history making, and it doesn't always land. So we'll wait and see what that's about. But let's talk about this card here. We have five matches as of today. Now, there is one SmackDown left before Backlash. Technically, they could add a match 24 hours before the show. Seems unlikely to me. So we got five matches, two of which are going to be airing. They're going to be simulcasting live the first hour on ESPN2. So you're going to get two matches on ESPN for free if you want to watch it. And then if you do not pay for the ESPN Unlimited app, or you don't have access to it, free access to it, you will have to pay the $30 fee, I guess, to see the rest of the show. But the two matches on ESPN2 will be Bron Breakker one-on-one with Seth Rollins, and Trick Williams defending his United States Championship against Sami Zayn. Now, Breaker and Rollins, they were going at it like cats and dogs last night. Seth Rollins really got the worst end of it. I'm very tempted to change my prediction here because I was going to say Bron Breakker, and now it's like, well, maybe I should say Seth Rollins. I'm going to stick to my guns on this. I feel like it would be more beneficial for Bron Breakker here, his first match back, to pick up a big win over Seth Rollins. But, I mean, at the end of the day, it's the first of what I'm sure is going to be a series of matches between the two. I'll stick to Bron for the win here. I mentioned Trick Williams defending the U.S. title against Sami Zayn. Yeah, I watched SmackDown on Friday, and I watched Trick Williams make the save for the Gingerbread Man. Nobody was in the Gingerbread Man costume. There was no little Yachty on SmackDown on Friday. It was basically a mannequin in the gingerbread costume, and he made the save for this inanimate object. And the Gingerbread Man was killed off by Sami Zayn to where we are going to get a funeral this week on SmackDown for the Gingerbread Man. Yes. And so I'm looking at this, and Sami Zayn now has, I mean, he has unleashed a beast within Trick Williams now. Trick is going to be out for revenge for what he did to this this inanimate object here. I know Trick just won the U.S. title at WrestleMania. I would not have put the belt on him at WrestleMania, personally. I think you could have kept that championship on Sami and really had him start doing some dastardly stuff, and I don't mean murdering Gingerbread Man costumes, and then eventually built to Trick winning the belt. I think that what I would do here and what I think they're going to do, I think they're going to put the belt back on Sami Zayn. I think they put the championship back on him, let him keep healing it up more and more every week on TV and really build to a big title win, like a big redemption arc of sorts for Trick Williams where he finally vanquishes, you know, Sami Zayn. Kind of reminding me a little bit of the feud in the summer of 2011 between Randy Orton and Christian. I could see something similar here with Sami Zayn and Trick Williams. I mean, hell, you could stretch this out all the way to SummerSlam if you really wanted to. To me, it's a lot more interesting than just having Trick beat him again. He already beat him. So he's going to go in there and beat him a second time. Okay, so what? Then what? I mean, I guess they can move on to Trick and Carmelo Hayes, and I am looking forward to seeing that at some point, but why do you have to go to it right now? Put the belt back on Sami. Let's drag this out a little bit more. We have Io Sky one-on-one with Asuka. There's something missing here. I can't quite put my finger on it. But we got a pre-taped promo, very dramatic music in the background. We had the English subtitles, both women sitting across from each other. It was very well done. And I'm sure part of it was that they wanted to do it this way to get the subtitles on the screen, so they pre-taped it. But also, I'm sure what they did not want, they wanted to try to avoid, were any chance of, we want Kairi. Like the hashtag that had been trending for a little bit there on social media. Brian Alvarez is saying that within WWE, the feeling is there is a better than 50% chance that Kairi Sane shows up at Backlash to at least finish off the storyline, which I hope that she does. Now, if she wanted to turn around to them, if they asked her to do so and she said no, I wouldn't blame her one bit. But it would be nice to at least get one more appearance from her to pay this thing off. It would be the proper ending to this story. Even AJ Styles on his podcast this week talked about how shocked he was when he heard that Kairi was among the names that were released. So we're not just talking about the fans. I mean, even her own colleagues were stunned, and they don't really have an explanation for it. Kairi, for her part, I didn't get to mention this last week, but for her part, she saw all the discourse online about her release and people saying, well, maybe it was her choice. Maybe she was homesick and she wanted to go back to Japan. That is what happened the first time that she was in the company, whatever it was, 5 years ago. But she posted on social media saying, what I can say is I know there's been a lot of speculation, but I truly love this work and my teammates and my fans. I've never walked away and I've given my all in everything I do. I hope that you are all doing well. So in so many words, it basically sounded like she was dispelling those rumors like, yeah, don't blame me. This was not my choice. Even if it was something that she had hinted at and they had some sense that she was going to want to go back to Japan at some point, you have this match coming up on a PLE in 2 weeks. Again, the timing of it just doesn't make any sense. I would love to see her make a quick cameo here, if nothing else, and just finish the story and get a nicer send-off, an actual send-off, rather than, you know, what they got. Io Sky and Asuka, this is a match I've been looking forward to for a long time. You know, the story they told in that segment last night was, Io was her, you know, her pupil right? This talking about senpai and pupil, and you're my biggest disappointment, Asuka told her. So there's a story there between the two of them. It's just not the story, right, that they were telling with Kairi involved for weeks and weeks and weeks. But I'm looking forward to the match. I hope they give these women at least 10 minutes. I know Liv Morgan and Stephanie Vaquer didn't get quite that much at WrestleMania, but it would be nice if they gave these women some time. Whether Kairi appears or not, and by the way, if I had to make a prediction, I'm going to say that she does appear. I think they convince her to show up, and they'll kind of try to wrap that story up with a nice little bow on it, and maybe that's just me being optimistic, but I think either way, Io Sky picks up the win here. Danhausen is going to have to find a partner of his choosing because he's got a tag team match against The Miz and Kit Wilson. And the mystery man slot, he's on social media asking, he's tagging different legends to team with him. This, to me, is the perfect spot for someone like Royce Keyes, who only recently debuted on SmackDown. They've given him some layups, lower-level guys, who if I were them, I'd be worried right now, who they just send out there to get beat really quick, make him look dominant. This is the perfect spot for him to step in and just whoop some ass. Now, you can't discount the possibility that Jelly Roll can end up in that spot. Jelly Roll had a match against Kit Wilson on SmackDown before WrestleMania. Jelly Roll was involved in two different stories leading into WrestleMania this year. And the only reason he's not wrestling on this show is because that tag match I mentioned got canceled. They could easily slide him in there as the mystery partner. But Royce Keyes, to me, makes more sense. Either way, whoever the partner is, Danhausen or Teamhausen, they're going to win the match. I will tell you, though, and we'll see what happens on SmackDown on Friday. If they add a match with Rhea Ripley defending her title, Tiffany Stratton is the U.S. champion now. Maybe she defends her title. It's not looking good. As of this moment, and Raw last night is in the books, they didn't add anything. There is no women's title match of any kind on this show. They have four singles championships that are occupied by women and the tag belts as well. Not a single women's championship match on this show. But they have room for Danhausen and the mystery partner against Miz and Kit Wilson. Amazing. And in the main event, we have the World Heavyweight Championship up for grabs. Roman Reigns defends against Jacob Fatu. I don't know that this is actually leading to anything, but on Friday, on their social media, WWE posted a video of Jacob Fatu on his phone backstage talking to somebody. And the caption was like, "Who's on the phone?" I'm like, are we doing this shit again? And they never identified who he was on the phone with, but he was freaking out. He was like, I know, and on and on and on. On the television show itself, I don't believe it was ever acknowledged. And then last night we had a contract signing with Roman Reigns and Jacob Fatu, and this phone call was never mentioned. So my hope is that the whole thing has been dropped. I don't know why we're recycling crappy angles from 6 weeks ago. Hopefully this mystery phone call bullshit doesn't factor into this match. But we're getting this match a hell of a lot sooner than I thought we would. It just kind of came out of nowhere, and Jacob wasn't even, and still technically is not, a part of Monday Night Raw. It's very weird, because we're in a situation right now where Jacob Fatu, who is a SmackDown star, is challenging for the World Heavyweight Championship on Raw. And then if you saw SmackDown on Friday, Gunther, who as far as we know is still a Raw star, attacked Cody Rhodes and hinted that he's coming after the WWE Championship on SmackDown. So it's all very weird and very confusing right now. This is a match where I don't want to see Jacob Fatu take the loss. It's a big spot for him regardless, and I'm very happy for him. Jacob's a good dude. He's a super talented guy, and I think he's got big things in his future, but not a World Heavyweight Championship this weekend. It's just hard for me to imagine 2 weeks after WrestleMania, or 2.5 weeks, whatever it's been, Roman wins the belt from CM Punk in this epic main event, and then his first title defense at Backlash, he drops it to Jacob Fatu, although if he was going to drop it to anybody, I guess him dropping it to family wouldn't really be all that surprising. I said this on my Raw review last night, there is a path here to a story where Jacob Fatu shocks the world and actually wins the World Heavyweight Championship, and the Usos align with Jacob Fatu, and they turn their back on their tribal chief. Because it's just very weird how in the last several weeks, Jimmy and Jey Uso have fallen in line. It's like we're back in 2022 and 2023 all over again, where they're all family, but they're like Roman's lackeys. You know, he's like he's playing mind games and controlling and manipulating his little cousins. And they're just talking about how, you know, you got to respect the tribal chief. You fall in line with the tribal chief. Because they had really broken out as kind of their own men, especially Jey. And it's like, man, we've kind of reverted back to where we were 2 or 3 years ago. And I also pointed out that in many of the segments on television recently, where the Usos have come out, they see Jacob, Jacob sees them. There's no physicality between them. Jacob hasn't attacked them. They haven't attacked Jacob. 2 weeks in a row now, this segment last night was a contract signing. It ended with Roman Reigns being put down for the second week in a row with a Tongan death grip, which they're putting over like the most lethal move in the history of pro wrestling. It's such an old school wrestling angle. As corny and silly as it is, I kind of like it. But like he put him down 2 weeks in a row with this Tongan death grip, and they established that the Usos were present. They were backstage, but they never came out to assist Roman. Something's going on here with the Usos. And I would love it if they pulled some sort of swerve here where, okay, they have not fallen in line with Roman. They know Roman is up to his usual bullshit. And maybe they end up kind of aligning with Jacob. But I feel like in order for that to work, Jacob would have to win the belt. And I just can't bring myself to predict a Jacob Fatu win here. You know, I still feel like Roman Reigns is going to retain the championship. Maybe there's some big post-match angle. Maybe Jacob doesn't have to win the belt for them to pull off some sort of big shocking twist at the end of the show. I hope there's something. And I certainly hope if there is something that they have a good plan to follow up on it, because they don't have a really good history of that. I'm sticking with Roman to retain. I just don't see the title changing hands here. Although, if these reports are to be believed, that Roman is not going to be appearing on any Raws at all the entire month of June, then yes, I would rather they take that championship away from him now. We don't need an absentee champion for the entire month of June. Whatever happened to Roman Reigns after WrestleMania saying, enough of this part-time bullshit that people keep throwing at me. You're going to see me. I'm going to be full-time through the summer. And then Roman was listed for almost every episode of Raw in the month of June because they have this big international tour coming up. So he was being advertised for Turin, Italy on June 1st, Paris, France on June 8th, Baltimore, Maryland on June 15th. Where'd that come from? And then London, England on June 22nd. I love it. Italy, France, Baltimore, and London. I love the random stop in Baltimore on this international tour. But there were a lot of fans online thinking that, okay, they're trying to swerve us by making us think that he's not going to walk out of Backlash with the belt, because all of a sudden, Roman was wiped from the schedule. And all of these dates that he was listed for, he was no longer being listed for. And so people were coming up with all kinds of conspiratorial reasons why this was done. Oh, TKO asked him to take a pay cut. They wanted him to restructure his... I'm like, of all the people that TKO would ask to restructure their deals, do you honestly, in your heart of hearts, believe that Roman Reigns, okay, would be one of those... Their biggest draw would be one of those people? Give me a fucking break. Come on now. You got to use your head with these things. They're going to go to a lot of people, I'm sure. Roman Reigns ain't going to be one of them. But we got an answer here, it seems like, anyway. Per Mike Johnson, a PW Insider, he says, we are told that Roman Reigns was advertised in error and that it was a mistake on the TKO WWE side as to what dates he would be working. It is not a case of an issue between Reigns and the company or an issue with the deal that he signed in the run-up to WrestleMania. It was a clerical error. So I don't know if that means he is not going to be on any shows in the month of June or just those dates were incorrect. I mean, the guy could at least show up in Baltimore, even if he doesn't want to travel overseas. I mean, come on now. It's Baltimore. You could at least make a pit stop in Baltimore. So anyway, we'll see what happens with his schedule. But this was my concern, you know, going into WrestleMania, where I don't want to see Roman Reigns walking around with the world championship again, asking people to acknowledge him if he's not actually going to be on the show. He's been on the show every week since WrestleMania, which has been, now he's not doing a whole hell of a lot. You know, it's a lot of the same shit where he comes out and says the same stuff and puts his finger in the air, acknowledge me. Okay, fine. But at least he's present. If all of a sudden he's not going to be present for an extended period of time, get that belt off of him. We've been there, done that with these absentee champions. It makes the shows very hard to sit through sometimes because The crown jewel of the show is not there. Everything is built around the champion and the championship. And when that person isn't there for 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks in a row, it's painful. And there's no need for it. You may as well move the belt onto someone like Jacob Fatu. But that's the backlash card as it currently stands. We'll see if they add anything on SmackDown on Friday. I know Levesque is basically allergic to adding a sixth match on most of these shows, but it would be nice to get one. Yeah, I mentioned SmackDown. I just want to mention this briefly. Ricky Saints made his main roster debut on Friday night. He's been in NXT now for a while, and they had him interrupt a Cody Rhodes promo. And there's obviously a friendship with the two of them that goes back many years. So the two of them had an interaction back and forth, right? Not a bad spot for Ricky Saints to be in, cutting off the WWE champion. Not only did he cut him off, they had a match, non-title, later on in the show. And it was after that match, which of course Ricky lost, and that's fine, where Raw's Gunther, showed up and attacked Cody and put him in a sleeper hold and then held up the WWE championship. And my first thought was, wow, Randy Orton must really be hurt. Because how do you not follow up on a punt kick to the skull that closed out your first night of WrestleMania? How do you not immediately book a rematch between Cody Rhodes and Randy Orton? They are clearly pivoting away from Orton for the time being. And the only reason that makes sense is if Orton is hurt and he's not going to be available. So if he is hurt, hopefully it's nothing too serious, because I would like for them to circle back around to Cody and Randy again without Pat McAfee to stink up the whole angle. But then you start to wonder, like, what is the storyline explanation here going to be? Remember, Paul Heyman said that he owed, and Gunther said as much, that you owe me a favor, because he attacked Seth Rollins in the lead up to WrestleMania, said you owe me. So what does he owe him? Heyman was in the background talking to Nick Aldis during one of the backstage segments. You know, Triple H likes to put these little Easter eggs in there. And a lot of times it means absolutely nothing. It leads absolutely nowhere. But sometimes it might actually have some meaning. If Heyman is involved, then it probably means something. And I see him in the background. I don't know if he was arguing with him. They were having a animated conversation. To me, it wouldn't make a whole lot of sense if Heyman was getting Gunther a WWE championship match, because Cody Rhodes has gone on television since WrestleMania. His new catchphrase now is, I'm not hard to find, I'm hard to beat. So if you want a title shot, you step up and you ask for one. I don't get the sense that if Gunther stepped up and said, Cody, hey, I want a shot at that WWE championship, that Cody would be like, oh, well, I can't do that. Yeah. You got to go through the proper channels for that. Like, get the hell out of here, right? It would be very easy to make that match without Paul Heyman being involved. But if Gunther is a member of the Raw roster, you got to get him over to SmackDown, right? So maybe that's the nature of the favor. It almost feels to me like we're in the midst of a transfer window and they just haven't publicly announced it, which I never understood. You know, they did the transfer window stuff in lieu of a draft. Was it last year, a couple of years ago? And I said, we don't need a draft. The draft television shows that they do are just fucking horrendously boring. You do a transfer window. You could do it twice a year. You set up a window of about 2 or 3 months. And during that period, you know, guys can go back and forth. You know, you can have the general managers. They can work out trades, call-ups from NXT. And then when the portal window closes, that's it. No more moves until maybe 6 months later. And then you do another transfer window. Maybe that's what's happening right now, and they just haven't told us. Because we certainly don't need to have another draft right now. I like the idea of Cody and Gunther. And look, if Cody needs a challenger, if he needs a number one contender, they don't have a lot of really good options right now. So I don't hate the idea of Cody against Gunther. But it feels like if they're going to do that match, it's almost like Gunther has to win. You know, the one match they ever had together was a couple of years ago at Crown Jewel, because they were both champions of their respective brands. It was champion against champion for the Crown Jewel title that they had created. And Cody won. So to run this match back and just have Cody beat him again, it's like, where do you go from there? You know, Gunther has been this unstoppable force since he became the career killer, this whole gimmick now. And I don't know, to just book that match and just have him lose would seem very counterproductive and anticlimactic to me. So I do wonder if they're setting up Gunther to take the belt from Cody and then maybe have Cody fight to get it back. Could be very similar to what they did last year heading into SummerSlam, where he had to beat Cena to get the belt back. But as things stand right now, I hope they take the time to explain it. You know, guys going from one brand to the other to challenge for the other belt. Like, none of this makes any sense. On the AEW front, there was a story going around the last few days on social media that has gotten a lot of play. So I wanted to address it here, even though it is not something that has been verified by multiple outlets. But since some people are running with it as if it is gospel, I figured I should at least mention it here. Now, there was a story that was published on X. Yes, on X, by John McMullen, who writes about the Philadelphia Eagles for Sports Illustrated, concerning AEW and Warner Brothers Discovery. Now, why would someone who covers Philadelphia sports be writing about AEW? Well, this is the same John McMullen who, in May of 2019, while working for TSN, reported that AEW's deal with Turner Media, this was months before Dynamite even premiered on TV, their deal that had just been announced with Turner did not include rights fees, but that Warner would be paying for production and there would be an ad revenue split between the two sides. Something that Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer and Andrew Zarian of the Matt Men podcast later backed up. So he has reported on AEW before, but that was one time 7 years ago. Now he's reporting that, and I'll just read to you directly from what he wrote here, both AEW and Warner Brothers Discovery have refuted multiple industry sources' claims that Warner Brothers Discovery informed Tony Khan and AEW in the summer of 2025 that the plan was for WBD to be sold and others would be making decisions on further programming. AEW, the second largest wrestling promotion in the U.S., is currently in the midst of a three-year deal valued at $170 to $185 million annually, including in-kind benefits. The agreement included a 2028 option year that WBD could have exercised. The idea by sources outside of AEW that WBD CEO David Zaslav personally informed Khan that a sale was coming was vehemently denied, with the explanation that no showrunners were informed, including Khan. As often happens in pro wrestling, the news was initially misunderstood, in part because the first prominent report came from the high-powered industry agent Nick Lopiccolo, a vocal critic of Tony Khan. In wrestling's highly tribal fan environment, the development was widely interpreted as a major blow to AEW. In reality, it was not inherently negative. The idea outside the company was that it was an early courtesy heads-up from a business partner, giving AEW time to prepare contingency plans ahead of decisions that will be made by new ownership. In other words, WBD won't be making decisions on AEW programming in the future. Which, I mean, yeah, no shit. If they're going to be sold, if the sale goes through before the end of the year, then yeah, WBD will not be making decisions on AEW programming in the future. That goes without saying. There was no pushback on that sentiment, but there was also no heads up to Khan per the WBD side, something that would be against SEC rules. On February 27th of this year, Paramount Skydance and WBD entered into a definitive merger agreement under which Paramount will acquire WBD in an all-cash deal at $31 per share, blah, blah, blah. WBD shareholders overwhelmingly approved the deal on April 23rd, and it is expected to close in the third quarter of 2026, pending regulatory approval. AEW will have roughly 12 to 16 months to secure a new television deal with either Paramount Skydance or elsewhere. Paramount, though, already has significant business ties to WWE's parent company, TKO, through the UFC, and a major billion-dollar television rights agreement, which could complicate renewal talks. In theory, worst-case scenario is that the new owners could also choose to buy out the remainder of AEW's current deal and remove the programming from their platforms entirely, but that is very unlikely. Sources close to Khan claim that he has told associates that AEW is prepared to move to YouTube if needed, presumably as a temporary placeholder while seeking a new partner. However, one source indicated Khan believes he could potentially strike a comparable deal to his current one with Google/YouTube TV, which has invested heavily in the NFL, but has been relatively quiet on broader sports and sports entertainment content. The company also rushed the launch of the My AEW app on March 9th as an in-house streaming option and additional distribution safeguard, under the guise of international issues in the wake of Triller's significant financial issues. For the record, and this is me speaking now, Triller does have very legitimate financial issues, so AEW launched its own service. You know, the fact that they did that does not seem all that surprising. Whether it was rushed out, I'm not sure where he's getting that from. But it only makes sense because there's been talk that, you know, Triller has been hanging by a thread for a while now. I know they were delisted not that long ago. They're not doing too well. Publicly, Khan has continued to project stability and business as usual to maintain internal morale and reassure AEW's loyal fan base, often speaking of a strong relationship with Paramount chief David Ellison, with the goal of continuing to work with new ownership. Outside AEW, the belief is the company is operating as if it will need a new linear or streaming TV deal. Inside, the idea is to leverage the Khan family's power with the NFL and their prior relationship with Ellison to gain an extension. There is no contractual reason why Paramount could not carry both UFC and AEW, as there is no TKO exclusivity. So that's what he wrote. And I see people running with this as if it's, you know, Henny Penny, the sky is falling. There is really nothing new in there that we did not already know outside of a couple of things that haven't been independently verified. Yeah, he mentions Nick LaPiccolo, who is a well-known talent agent, and he has had a lot of very negative things to say about Tony Khan and AEW. That doesn't mean anything in terms of like everything he says is inherently false. It just means we're going to need more than the word of this one person that WBD gave AEW advance warning that they were selling the company. And if it's illegal to do so, then nobody is ever going to admit to that anyway. So it's one of those things that you're never going to be able to verify. The stuff about Paramount having a business relationship with TKO and therefore they may be unlikely to pick up AEW beyond its existing deal. I mean, I've been talking about this for months, as has everyone else. You know, this guy doesn't know the answer to that any more than you or I do. You know, they may keep AEW, they may not keep AEW. This isn't exactly breaking news. If they don't feel like AEW is worth $180 million or so per year that they're getting now, or more than that, because you would think Tony Khan would want an increase after this contract, he wouldn't want to be flat, then they'll cut ties. And he'll have to find another home, whether it's Amazon or wherever, you know, for his TV shows. Or maybe they won't want to be in the pro wrestling business at all. You know, it's absolutely possible that AEW could end up on YouTube temporarily if they have to figure out a plan B. WWE just did that with NXT. Stand and Deliver aired live on their YouTube channel. And then they announced a deal last week with the CW network, so it's not going to be on YouTube anymore, starting with the Great American Bash later on in the summer. And I will say, as a viewer, YouTube is a great option because it's free and it is easily accessible, but Tony Khan can't keep his shows on YouTube and collect a Google AdSense check every month and still continue to spend money the way that he does. YouTube is not a viable long-term option for them. But the point is, this is all conjecture, and people need to stop treating this story like it's some sort of bombshell. It's not. LaPiccolo is his main source for it. You know, McMullen is also the one who wrote up the, quote, exclusive story about Tony Khan targeting LaPiccolo a few months ago with bot accounts on social media. It seems pretty clear to me that he is very likely McMullen's source on this. And in the absence of any other sources to back this stuff up, of which he has none, this is a non-story until next year. Last week's episode of Dynamite in Fairfax, Virginia was the company's highest domestic attendance for a Dynamite since their Grand Slam show at Arthur Ashe Stadium in September of 2024. They had over 5,200 fans, their highest of the last 2 years. But it's not looking nearly as good for tomorrow night. They're in North Charleston, South Carolina. They have barely 1,500 tickets out in a venue where they did over 2,200 for Dynamite a couple of years ago. Those numbers come per WrestleTix. They'll have a lot more than that for Double or Nothing later this month, with renovations being done to Arthur Ashe. They are running next door at Louis Armstrong Stadium. And they've got nearly 12,000 tickets out for the pay-per-view, which is looking like Darby Allin defending his AEW World title against MJF, even though he keeps refusing to give MJF a rematch unless MJF puts something on the line. The only thing I could think of is that we end up with Max putting his career on the line. Or he does what Hangman did against him at Revolution and says, you know, if he doesn't win the title, that he can never again challenge for the world championship. First, though, Darby has to get past Kevin Knight, the TNT champion, tomorrow night. So he's going to be defending this title every single week on Dynamite, like he's been given only weeks left to live You know, with the way Darby wrestles, it always feels like he's got only weeks left to live. They're trying to get as many defenses in for him as they can before he drops it back to MJF. I mean, that's what's going on here. So tomorrow night, it is Kevin Knight's turn. He beat MJF last Wednesday to keep the TNT title. It was a great match, too. The best on the show. And Darby retained on that show over Brody King. Also at Double or Nothing, FTR will defend their AEW tag team titles against Adam Copeland and Christian Cage. The old Canadian connection. So that is locked in for the show in an I Quit New York street fight where if Cope and Christian lose, they can never again team up together. See, I don't think we have enough stipulations in that one. That's three. Maybe they could add three more. Kazuchika Okada, he defends the international title against Konosuke Takeshita. This is a match I've been waiting a long time for, ever since their first meeting in the Continental Classic back in December. That's my match right there. That's the one I'm looking forward to the most. And they've teased the match between Swerve Strickland and Bandido, which came out of nowhere, since Swerve has been off television since losing to Kenny Omega well over a month ago. But hey, I'm all for him and Bandido throwing down. That's fine with me. And that's all we know so far. Still 2.5 weeks to flesh out the rest of the card. It is a 3-hour block of TV tomorrow night, the usual 2 hours of Dynamite. And then they're running Collision from 10 to 11 right after. So just be aware of that. Just what we need. More 3-hour shows. And we've got an update on Kota Ibushi. And it is a very Ibushi-like update. Ibushi broke his femur in a match with Josh Alexander last October. It was a total fluke. They both fell off the top rope and they fell to the floor and Ibushi broke his leg. And he said the doctors told him that it would be 2 years before he was ever back in the ring. And he said his goal was to be back in one. And he showed up at the Tokyo Dome in January to pay tribute to Hiroshi Tanahashi in his retirement. And he refused any sort of assistance, no cane or any wheelchair, nothing. He was going to walk down that long ramp at the Tokyo Dome to the ring. And he did. And he looked like he was in absolute agony. He was moving around like he was 80 years old. It was painful to watch. Then he had complications that required a second surgery. And now he comes to us on Instagram with this. Reflecting daily, growing daily, is moving forward. My femur isn't attached yet. But for now, challenge, challenge, challenge. I have to do it. That's about it. Second ring in 6 months. Moonsault hit the face. I love the translation on this. Still a lot of growth to recover. 44 years, 22 years career. From kickboxing to pro wrestling, 26 years of fighting life with no regrets. I'll do it. I wonder if the bones are okay. I wonder if the brain is okay. This crazy SOB attached a video of himself doing a standing moonsault in a ring. He can't help himself. He's clearly going stir crazy. He wants to come back, which is understandable, but if he pushes himself too hard, he may never come back. So I hope he takes whatever time he needs to heal up, especially if his femur still isn't attached. Maybe don't do moonsaults until the femur is attached. Anyway, got a couple of questions here from you guys. Let's run through this here. You could always email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com, or you can tweet me on X, @solemonster. Make sure to include the hashtag uncrowned. Daniel from Houston, Texas. I feel like Drew McIntyre as Oba Femi's next feud would be perfect. Like Oba, Drew also defeated Brock Lesnar in quick fashion. Plus, Oba and Drew already have some history, with Drew ruining Oba's first match with Cody Rhodes. The drawback to this is Drew losing yet another feud, but I think it could make for some good matches. Sure, sure. No, nobody will deny that it would be very good matches between them. I don't agree with it being his next feud, though. A lot of it has to do with the reasons you just mentioned, where we know it would be a loss for Drew McIntyre. I just think that's something you could build to for down the road. It's nothing. I mean, they're doing this open challenge with Oba right now, and I don't want to see them having him. I don't want to see them put him in situations where every week he's having matches with just lower level guys. You know, last night on Raw, he had a match with Otis, and it actually was 2 minutes long, but it ended up being a lot of fun. So that was great. But you don't have a lot of Otises on the roster, like that big guy that he can just very impressively pick up and toss around like nothing. I do think at some point we're probably going to get Omos reappearing on TV. And we're going to get that Omos and Oba Femi battle with Omos like towering over him. I would like to think the open challenge is actually building to something. I think if they had their smarts about them, it would be a King of the Ring win at the end of June at Night of Champions, but what do I know? Jesse from Dallas. From Houston, we go to Dallas. Look at that. I was rewatching some 2011 WWE, and I always remember Rey Mysterio winning the WWE Championship on Raw before dropping it back to John Cena that same night. Where does it rank among Super Cena's worst moments? And thoughts on the story that Vince McMahon did not want to run Cena versus Rey at SummerSlam a few weeks later, as he felt it wasn't a big enough match to headline? Well, that would be a decision that Vince McMahon made that I would agree with. John Cena against Rey Mysterio, I don't think was big enough to main event SummerSlam. So that's how I feel about that. As far as him winning the title from Rey, it was like an hour after Rey won the belt. He's having this big celebration in the back, and I don't even remember the circumstances around it. I think what happened was CM Punk had walked out, right? He had just won the belt. They had to crown a new champion, and so Cena was guaranteed a title shot. I just don't remember how it all came to be that Rey won the belt, and then Cena won it from... I don't remember the circumstances, but I remember thinking that night, like, man, what a dick. But yeah, I mean, look, in terms of like the worst Super Cena moments, I mean, look, I don't hold that against John Cena. You know, that was a booking decision. And you said it yourself. Vince McMahon didn't think Rey Mysterio was a big enough draw to be in the main event of SummerSlam. And again, I don't disagree. I don't think that was the right spot for Rey to be in at that point. But in terms of those moments, I mean, I don't know where it ranks. I mean, it certainly doesn't rank at the top of the list. That spot will always belong to SummerSlam in 2010 and what he did to the Nexus. Killed the Nexus dead in one night. And realized after the fact that he made a terrible mistake. Even though Chris Jericho and Edge warned him in advance, like, don't do this. Don't take a DDT on the concrete outside and then basically hulk up and come back and win the match. But he did anyway. And he went to them after and goes, you know, on second thought, I think you guys were right. Yeah. Yeah, they were. Anyway, keep the questions coming. Again, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Hey, best wishes to Chelsea Green. She has been out of the ring for months now with a broken ankle. She posted, though, on Instagram that she underwent a procedure on her heart. She said, after 10 years, doctors finally caught my SVT, and I was able to get a heart procedure done. 3 hours later, and I'm on the mend. SVT is a type of irregular heartbeat. I guess you can't really do anything until you kind of catch it in action. Sounds scary, but I'm happy to hear that she's doing well. So all the best to her. If you want to check out my other content, just search for Solid Monster Sounds Off on YouTube or the Solid Monster Sounds Off podcast. I'm Jason Solomon, and when it comes to the news, if you didn't know, now you know. And I will be back with you next Tuesday for more Uncrowned. So until then, take care, guys.